October 12th, 2012, Vrindavan, India, Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 1. All right. We started to go over this yesterday, but we'll go over it again today. So these are the results, the benefits. So now we know what pure devotional service is, but pure devotional service for most of us conditioned souls is a little intimidating, right? You say, don't have any other material desire, it should all be zero, no motives, no covering of karma again, only work for Krishna for his pleasure, just do the things that he likes. So most conditioned souls are not going to be very enthusiastic about something like that. If I say to you, I want you to work for somebody else without any motive of getting anything for yourself, without wanting material happiness or freedom from distress, liberation, and you just think about that person's happiness and you just only think about pleasing them, will anybody agree to this? No. You'll say, wait a minute, what about me? So, of course, in order to agree, we have to understand something about the nature of Krishna and the nature of bhakti. So these are the results that one gets from performing uttama bhakti. This is also the symptoms of advancement in uttama bhakti. And there's six altogether. Relief from distress, all auspicious, happiness above liberation, that is very rare, very difficult, incalculable bliss, and attracting Krishna. And as we went over yesterday, that the first two are experienced in sadhana, the first four in bhava, and all six in prema. You will also notice I put a little pink star that there's happiness in three places. There's happiness in sadhana, there's happiness in bhava, and there's happiness in prema. So the happiness in sadhana is part of shubhada, auspicious. It's auspicious because it makes you happy. In bhava, that it's a happiness above liberation, and then in prema, incalculable, impenetrable, concentrated, super happy. So happiness is mentioned in all three stages, which is important because Ananda Maya Sadhu are pleasure-seeking beings, and therefore we're not going to do anything unless it's going to bring us pleasure. We just won't. Or unless we imagine it's going to bring us pleasure. That's what drives us. As Prabhupada said, where did he say that in this book? That the impetus for action is the taste or pleasure we receive from it. Where was that? In the preface, yes. Okay, so yesterday we went over Kleshagni and Shubhada. So again, you can just review that the idea, the reason that Krishna consciousness, the pure devotional service, destroys distress is that all the things we experience as distress, all of our prarabdha karma, all of our suffering, originally comes from having a wrong identity, which leads us to sinful desires and sinful activities. So Krishna consciousness relieves all distress, and then it changes our identity. And when it changes our identity, first of all, we don't perform sins anymore, so we don't produce any new distresses. But what about all the old distresses that we already produce, the prarabdha karma? So the prarabdha karma is evident in our present body, in our family, our everything that has to do with this life. Now, we don't see that when people chant Hare Krishna, that their body just... Oh, thank you. That their body just vaporizes, right? Or just transforms. It's not like you sit and chant Hare Krishna and all of a sudden, you know, your ugly nose is pretty and your bank account gets filled up with money or something like that. So it's not that when we say Krishna consciousness destroys your corrupted karma, what exactly does that mean? We can understand how we can destroy your uncorrupted karma. That's not that difficult to understand. The uncorrupted karma is the results of things I've done in the past that I'm not yet suffering from. So Krishna can say, yeah, okay, that's finished. You won't have to suffer from that. Maybe you don't need to. What is the suffering for? The suffering is to teach us that we have the wrong identity. If I no longer think I can walk through walls, why do I need to get banged in the head by a wall? I don't. So if I've developed empathy, even if I used to eat meat, if I've developed empathy, there's no need to suffer as a cow or get killed. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes.
I've learned my lesson in another way, and I need to undergo the punishment. And we can also see that Krishna consciousness destroys the general inclination to sin and the specific inclinations to sin. So I'm sure that we have all experienced in Krishna consciousness that many things that we used to like to do, if we had sinful lives before, some of you have never had sinful lives, but if you've had a sinful life before, you could see that the sinful things that one liked to do, that a lot of those desires just disappear. Yes?
Okay, what is the difference in the
gender
inclination and specific inclination?
Okay, kucham, it's not focused. It's a mood of doing something against one's nature, but not specific things. Whereas bijam are very specific desires.
Can you make one practical example again? I know you didn't want to yesterday, but maybe it's more short, like something daily life.
Well, sinfulness means I want to take something and enjoy it separately from Krishna. But what do I want to take and enjoy separately from Krishna?
So just food. If you take food as an example?
That you're hungry, but you're hungry for a specific kind of food. Yeah.
I mean, I
didn't
know.
Something like that. Or like the child is thinking, I can't wait till I grow up and I can move away from my parents and I can do whatever I want. But what is it you want to do? That you may not know. I just want to do what I want. Well, what do you want to do? Well, I don't know. Something. So, but when you have something you want to do, I want to move out of the house and become a doctor. You know, that's a very specific. Yes?
Like two persons seeing the same object of sense gratification. One is getting attracted by it, and one is like indifference. So that, what is that?
Is the bijam.
That's
the bijam. And we have different bijams according to the, and our kutams is the, also the modes of nature. Because we're attracted or repulsed by particular sense objects according to the particular modes of nature that we've associated with. Which is why one person finds one thing attractive and another person finds the very same thing repulsive. Karanas gunasangasya. Sadasana.
It is bijam.
Bijam is specific attraction.
Kutam is like which has not become the seed yet.
Yes.
And it's like very, which is easy to...
It's much easier to get rid of in one sense, but it's more subtle. I mean, most people focus on the level of papam. They focus on the level of the actual actions rather than the mental state of attraction. And very few people focus on the kutam or the avidya. So only bhakti really hits the avidya, because even the jnanis, they're not getting to the root of the avidya. They're coming to, I'm not this body, but they're not coming to Jivaraswara, Paya, Krishna, and Chitams.
What I
understood
is a product level is easy to overcome. First, once you take the sadhana mukti, product is like that goes away. That's
which? Thing. Which does? Aparabdha or Parabdha? Well, Parabdha is a little funny because we're all walking around with our Parabdhas. This is my corrupted karma.
What does corrupted mean?
It's manifest now. This body, each of us has a body, yes? You all have bodies? That's your corrupted karma.
So corrupted means manifested?
Yeah. Corrupted karma, it's this thing. And the
circumstances. That has begun.
Prarabdha
means that has begun.
It's begun.
Prarabdha, beginning.
Already beginning.
Yeah, starting.
It's already starting there.
Prarabdha is starting. Already started.
Already started. Aparabdha hasn't started yet.
So, Madhuji, can you clarify once more?
Sure. So again, we can easily understand that bhakti can get rid of aparabdha karma. That's not hard to understand. Because aparabdha karma are the reactions to things that we've done in the past that we haven't yet suffered from. Just like if you borrow money from your friend and your friend says, you don't have to pay me back. That's like getting rid of aparabdha karma. You've already borrowed the money, but your friend is saying the debt is cleared. So we can understand that Krishna can say, okay, whatever you've done in the past, forget about it. You won't have to get a reaction for it. Aham sarva papebhyo mokshesha namasujaha. Finished. Okay? Then as far as what led to that, because aparabdha produces also the kutam and the bijam and the papam. It creates a circle, yeah. So the inclination to sin is a little bit more difficult to root out. I can forgive your debt, but you might still have a tendency to borrow money that you can't pay back. So you might do it again. And that's the idea of atonement. Atonement can get rid of the aparabdha karma, but it doesn't get rid of the kutam, the bijam, and the papam that the aparabdha karma produces. Atonement can prevent the aparabdha from becoming parabdha, but it can't really prevent the aparabdha from becoming kutam. And in fact, I might think, well, if I borrowed money and you don't ask me to pay it back, well, great, I'll just do it again. That's sinning on the strength of chanting. Where I do something sinful and I think Krishna excused it, okay, great. I can do more sins and Krishna will excuse it again and I can do more sins. Now the only way to really get rid of kutam is to work on avidya. So until avidya is gone completely, there's going to be still some kutam. Therefore there's going to be some bijam and therefore there's going to be some papam. So Krishna consciousness, real Krishna consciousness, can get rid of avidya at the root. And therefore all those other things are also gone. Yes?
So maybe when we get rid of that, more personality, more pure personality?
Well, that's a very good question. We have an eternal personality. We are something eternally, and that eternal personality for a conditioned soul is not apparent. Just like the conditioned soul doesn't see their eternal form, nor do they see their eternal personality. They're not aware of it. Well, we become like someone who has amnesia. I know one devotee who was interested in Krishna consciousness and came to a temple, saw a picture of Lord Nrsingadev, and didn't know what this picture was, but thought, oh, I'm going to pray to whoever this personality is in this picture. And so he prayed, please finish my material life by whatever means necessary. To Nrsingadev. Because he was interested in Krishna consciousness, but he felt he was too weak to actually make a commitment to Krishna. So a week later, he found himself, this is a true story, he's now a temple commander. A week later, he found himself on the side of the road, and he didn't know who he was. He remembered how to read and write and all that, but he didn't know his name, he didn't know his history, he didn't remember anything about his life. Nothing. So he ended up moving to the temple and becoming a devotee. And a couple years after he joined, a year after he got initiated, his spiritual master said, you know, I think you might want to find out something about your history. And he put up advertisements in the city with his picture and eventually found his family. But he told me, he said, it was much easier when I didn't know who I was. I didn't have all the baggage.
Who you thought he was.
Yeah. Who, what?
Who you thought he was.
Yes, exactly. So we've forgotten who we are. And he said, you know, he had to just make up an identity. He just made up a name for himself and so he could function. So that we, you know, we've forgotten who we are. We think, okay, I'm this and that, and I belong to this family, and I'm this. I have this kind of person. When you have amnesia, you forget also what you like. You know, if you research people who have amnesia, they don't remember what kind of food they like. They don't remember what kind of colors they like. They don't remember it, what kind of music they like. They don't remember about themselves. So we don't remember who we are. So yes, when this avidya is destroyed, one gradually remembers who one is. Yes?
Yeah. So which level this avidya gets to the sattva level, it is only a practice gets eradicated. So which level is it like will completely...
Completely is a prema. But enough, at the sadhana level, enough, sufficiently, that one feels relief from all distress.
How to work on kutam, vijan and papam, as you said, is not possible on sadhana level.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Definitely is.
Okay, further advance in sadhana.
Remember, sadhana level here is defined as going up to bhava. So sadhana level is going up through asakti. But yes, it is. Even someone at the very beginning. Even someone at the very beginning, even at Abhishrata and Sadhu Sangha, if you start thinking, even if you haven't realized it, if you just start thinking and making decisions on the basis of I'm a soul. And what I want to talk, I talked about yesterday, but I want to just review it. The real stickler, I think, is the Prarabdha Karma. Because what I'm experiencing right now, the other stuff can go away, but how is the Prarabdha Karma is not going to go away like that? Do you understand the difference?
Yes. It's already manifested.
It's already manifested. My body is not going to just dissipate the second I chant the Hare Krishna mantra one time.
Well,
that's for everybody. That's even if you're a materialist. Yes?
Doesn't it say that you can, become fully Krishna conscious in this life? You can have, so that means sort of spiritualizing your body.
Yes, your body does become spiritualized. Now, I talked yesterday about two ways in which a devotee feels freedom from the Prarabdha Karma. Does anybody remember the two ways I said?
You said that he's, like, one way is that he thinks that I'm the servant of Krishna and his soul, so this body is not myself, so he doesn't feel the karma?
You don't feel it. Your mind's in a different state. And we've all experienced this sometimes when you're thinking about something and you just don't notice some problem around you. Have you all noticed that?
Yes.
Like, let's say you have some anxiety, but then you hurt your finger, and then the pain from your finger is so great you forget about the anxiety. Or the other way, you have so much anxiety you forget about your stomach ache. You understand? We can be, or can be even something very happy. You know, if you're so excited about something, you can forget to eat and you don't even notice that you're hungry. Has everyone experienced this?
Yes.
Okay. So one way that the devotee, even at the sadhana platform, can be free from Prarabdha Karma is that you don't feel it as distress. You feel it, but you don't feel it as distress. You don't identify with it. Your mind's somewhere else. Your consciousness is somewhere else.
Don't identify with what?
Okay, just like the other day, someone wrote me an email, someone I don't know, who said, I can't wait until I read your obituary on the internet. In other words, I'd like it if you would die immediately. So it didn't bother me because I don't know this person. I didn't feel disturbed. I felt amused. Because I don't have any attachment to this person. I don't know who they are. If some random person in the world wishes I was dead, so what? Who cares? Now, if it was somebody that I cared about, then I would be very distressed. Or you drive down the street and there's a car accident. And some people you don't know. And you just look and say, oh, what a bad accident. But if it's your mother, then you're in distress. You know, or you read the news and the news says 20,000 people died in an earthquake in Turkey or something. And you say, oh, that's very sad. And then you go on with your life. But if you come from Turkey and you have relatives in Turkey and you know people, and then it's a whole different thing. So one way that we become free from the corrupted karma, even as sadhakas, is we learn how to put our mind in such a state that we no longer identify with the body. And that can be done even mechanically. Prabhupada gives that example of Stalin. That can be done even mechanically. You don't even require to be a spiritual person to do that. But if you're a spiritual person and you naturally think about Krishna, then you don't experience pain as pain. You experience it as interesting, but not as pain. Like when that person wrote me that email, I thought, oh, this is interesting. How fascinating. But it didn't hurt me. I didn't feel any pain from it. Is it clear?
Yeah.
Okay. Other way one gets free from corrupted karma, I mentioned yesterday, is one sees everything that's happening. So one way is a kind of detachment and neutrality. That's also achieved by the jnanis and the dhyanis and the karma yogis, and it can be achieved even in a mechanical kind of detachment and neutrality that comes naturally in devotional service. The other way that one doesn't feel the corrupted karma as distress is we feel that we're part of Krishna's adventure, we feel that we're part of Krishna's pastimes, and therefore all of our distress has meaning as part of the story. And we see it as something exciting. Something like if you're watching a drama or someone's watching a movie, you're reading a book and there's some difficult thing happening. But it's exciting. People are paying their money to watch a movie where there's some crisis. Right? Right? Yes? Why are they doing that? Because it's enjoyable. So just like in Goloka Vrindavan, Gokula Vrindavan, so the residents, everything gets flooded by Indra. And they're shivering from the cold. But they're enjoying that because it's part of Krishna's pastimes. When Krishna takes the gopis' clothes and they're in the Yamuna in the winter, early in the morning, and just little... and they're shivering in the Yamuna. But they're enjoying that because it's part of Krishna's pastimes, it's part of Krishna's adventure. Same with all the distress that the Pandavas went through. So it's not like, well, that's for them and that's not for us. No, it's also for us. We're in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Jaya Dharma, that depends on how you see things, how you interpret things. Again, even materially, if I'm sacrificing for some higher cause, I don't see my sacrifice as a distress. I was actually just thinking about that this morning. There was some, not that long ago, it was some earthquake or something, and there was a woman who saved the lives of her children by putting her body on top of them. And in the process, some of the debris fell on her, and I think she had to have an arm and one foot amputated. I don't know why I was thinking about that this morning, but I was thinking she must feel very proud. You know, I gave my arm and my foot for my children's life. And even though the rest of her life, she's going to have to use a prosthesis or some crutches or something. You know, I doubt very much if she'll see it as suffering. We're saying, you see this with military people, they get injured and they're just like, I gave this for my country. And they don't feel it as suffering. Yes?
Also, we spoke about it earlier, the Maharaj who lost his leg in Mayapur. Yeah, he told me personally that he was just glad to be rid of it. It was just causing trouble anyway, it wasn't dysfunction. He said, oh, I was happy.
So that's the two ways. One is through detachment and neutrality, and the other is through a positive saying that this is part of Krishna's. Yes?
Maharaj, like a devotee knows very well that whatever the prarabdha is now is very in a very lesser.
Yes.
That is also prarabdha. That is also an eradication of prarabdha.
Definitely.
So this is. He has to suffer a lot, but this is what little...
Of course, it's very difficult to think like that. Because generally we think, I'm not suffering a little, we generally think I'm suffering a lot, and I'm suffering more than anybody else, and, you know, I'm such a good person, I shouldn't be suffering at all. Whereas Lord Brahma says we should be thinking, oh, really, I deserve to suffer much more. So that's a very difficult platform.
What will be the course of action for all of these items, kutam, vicham and papam, for a person who is changing his mode of nature from ignorance to passion to sattva?
Oh my, what a question. I don't know, let me think about that.
Isn't that about purifying the gates?
I would think that what's happening there is your identity is also somewhat changing, and therefore your general inclination somewhat change, and then your specific inclination somewhat change. So it's like a gradual opening. Your general inclinations in the mode of ignorance are to steal. Your general inclinations in the mode of passion is to be pious. Your general inclinations in the mode of goodness is for salvation. So that would determine the specific kinds of bijam that you would be attracted to. The mode of ignorance you're going to be attracted to, you know, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating, lying, cheating, stealing, insulting, etc. The mode of passion you're going to be very attracted to philanthropic work, caring for others, charity, being a good person in the world, accepting, you know, increasing your material opulence, living a very opulent life, having a lot of honor and prestige, having people think that you're a good person. In the mode of goodness, you're going to be very attracted to doing things for purification. So that's going to show up as different specific inclinations.
I mean to say, if because this kutam, vijam, papam, these all refer to kind of sin, a general inclination and specific and so on.
Yes.
So when the person rises above the modes of material nature, that is above the three modes, so what are the...
There aren't any of them, then they're gone. Finish.
What are the stages from like this kutam, vijam and all this?
Finish.
Finish.
Above the modes of nature, finish. Because then you don't have a vidya, you have vidya. Then your general inclination is loving service, specific inclination, I want to do a specific loving service, I want to be Krishna's cow, I want to be Krishna's friend, I want to be. And then your activities are anushilana, you're doing activities of serving Krishna, and what do they produce? They produce a spiritual body. So it's none of that is operating.
And it's like jnanis, impersonalist, who are above the modes and still not completely into the real identity. So still they are all the...
Yes, so the impersonalists, and this is the example Rupa Goswami gives, that the impersonalists, they haven't killed the snakes. So it gives the example of Parupta Karma. Let me back up a little bit. For the Parupta Karma, which we were talking about, Rupa Goswami gives the example of Devahuti saying that a dog eater who becomes a devotee is qualified to perform yajnas. So that doesn't mean that all dog eaters who become devotees are going to perform yajnas. They might not know how. But they're no longer disqualified on the basis of their body. So that's an example of how you still have the body, but like you were saying, the body becomes spiritualized. Your body is no longer restricting you in terms of taking up Krishna consciousness. It's no longer an impediment. So that's another way one can think about the Parupta Karmas being gone. Otherwise, how am I sitting here talking about Rupa Goswami's literatures in Vrindavan? You know, how can I do that? I can only do that if my devotional service, the Parupta Karma, is no longer acting as an impediment. So that's the example he gives. The example he gives of Kutam and Bija is Ajamil. That Ajamil's tendency to sin was eradicated. And he talks about the jnanis, because they don't fully get rid of the avidya, they can easily start the cycle again. And Prabhupada talks about how they may, you know, end up doing like motive goodness or motive passion work because they're bored. They don't really have the bliss of being Krishna's servant. So in one sense, they're kind of like what I was saying, the kid who says, I want to grow up and be on my own, but what do you want to do? I don't know. So the jnani is like, I realize a soul, but what do I do as a soul? That they don't know. Because when he saw the Vishnu Judas, he no longer had a desire to be a sinful person. He understood I'm a soul.
By that time, did he chant Hare Krishna?
Yes, he actually went to Hardwar. Well, he chanted Narayana. I don't know if he chanted Hare Krishna, but chanted Narayana. And he went to Hardwar, and he perfected his bhakti. But his desire for sin was gone.
He's chanting Narayana
many times. And the Sadhu Sangha. Chanting the holy name and then the Sadhu Sangha. What we see practically is that the Kutam and the Bijam seem to go gradually. We see with most people who take up Krishna consciousness that some sinful inclinations and some sinful desires immediately go and some take some time to go. So a person, you know, they may within 5 minutes lose a desire to do one sinful thing they did their whole life, and something else might take 10, 15, 20 years. I mean, it depends on how attached you are to it, how deep-rooted it is. Ajamil is the example. So from that's from the Bhagavatam 6th canto. So he was the one who was, he was very sinful, and he had a little boy named Narayana.
Isn't that
Kutam
and Bija, which are in mode of ignorance, they go first, then mode of passion?
I don't think so. Because you're thinking mode of passion because Papa is active? I don't think so. I think there's Kutam, Bijam, Papam in passion, ignorance, and goodness.
So when we take devotional service, the first category which gets eliminated is like no ignorance.
You think you're trying to make an equivalency between things that you can't make an equivalency of? The modes don't correspond to each one of those.
What are different modes?
So when you take the Krishna consciousness, your ignorant Kutam and Bijam and Papam will go first. It depends what you're attached to. It's so individual. So if you have a particular person, You have a Krishna Dasa or a Krishna Dasi. And maybe there's some mode of ignorance sin that they're really attached to. And some mode of goodness sin that they're not really attached to. So it's the things that we're holding on to that stay the longest, whatever mode they're in.
For example, devotees, like I have heard from devotees only that once you take to Krishna consciousness, first regulative principles, like the four regulative principles, first is meeting the, it goes away.
It depends on you. That's individual. It's individual. Depends who you are.
Many choose meeting as the last one because it's the most difficult for many people.
Yeah.
Where it goes first.
That depends. There's one Indian gentleman I know in London, and he told me that he was following the other three, and it took him 2 years to eat veg after eating non-veg. 2 years. And everything else he did immediately. It depends on your conditioning and your background. Now, it's very interesting. If you go to the Western cities, for example, most young Westerners will find it fairly easy to be vegetarian and to give up gambling, and they'll struggle with intoxication, illicit sex. If you preach in the countryside in the West, it's the opposite. So I remember we were at our farm in Pennsylvania, and the local farmers, they're all raising animals for slaughter. But most of them are Christians, and you tell them no intoxication, no illicit sex, okay, we can do that. No gambling, they weren't gambling. No meat eating, no meat eating.
Yeah.
That was their life. It was raising animals for slaughter. So that was very difficult for them. It depends.
Green Bengal
also. Yeah.
Fish.
They're fish, exactly.
Coastal city love
life. Yeah, because they're relying on the fish. So for some people, you know, some people, they never take any intoxication. Other people, they can't live without their tea or their cigarette. Or, you know, each person has their particular attention. Some people, they never had illicit sex in their life. They're not interested in it. Somebody else, they're having, you know, 10 partners a day. And for them, it's very difficult. So everybody has their different, just like for some people, chanting 16 rounds is very easy. They come to the temple, they pick up beads, and they're chanting 16 rounds. Other people, it can take 10 years for them to chant 16 rounds. Does that make sense? It's very individual. I don't think you can put a thing and say, this is what goes first and this is what. That depends. What are you attached to? What particular combination of the modes have each of us cultivated? So we have certain parts of our avidya that we really are attached to, and other parts of our avidya we're very ready to give up. So I have certain concepts about myself that I'm terrified to give up because I'm afraid I wouldn't exist anymore. And those things I'm going to hold on to. And those things are going to keep that part of the avidya that I'm holding on to is producing a certain kutam and bijam and papam. And the parts of my avidya that I'm willing to let go of, then the kutam, bijam and papam that goes with it also comes. Okay, I'm going to take a break today before people really need one. So, I'll take a break while everybody's still alert. I'm going to wait like I did yesterday. 10 minutes. So, till 3:35 on my clock. And please actually get up.